And so it begins.
And now, here with an unlimited supply of misinformation...
35.
...is Mr. Know-It-All.
Overthink
John,
everything.
John, I love your show.
I overthink everything. It's 110. Hi, it's John Williams. We're live in the Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It says Allstate over my right shoulder. Left shoulder, sunshine. I want to talk about the weather for a second, though. I will keep you posted on NCAA Buckeball scores. I'm wearing purple today, and it was just by coincidence. I actually didn't think about it, and then I saw Jeff Hill, our sales manager, and he had his Northwestern purple stuff on, and I said, oh, that's right. I mean, not that I forgot, but I didn't remember, and then it dawned on me, hey, I'm wearing purple too. Whoop, whoop. So that's going to be a lot of fun this afternoon. I'm honestly as happy as I am for the players and the coach. And the fans, I could not be any happier than I am for Dave Ennett. He's so, you know, identified with the program. He's called so many games over the years. And how nice for Dave to be doing the play-by-play. Gonzaga still losing to South Dakota State 10-6 right now.
That's the home of Tom Kelly, of course.
South Dakota State.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's the 16-1, Steve Bertrand. That's the 16-1.
You think that's going to happen?
I have it in my brackets. I have Gonzaga. For
really?
Some reason, I'm a Gonzaga hater.
Well,
sorry if you're a Zag, but I don't like you guys.
Because I don't think we see them that much.
Right.
And they always seem to bow out a little early.
And they're really good in a really weak conference this year. So I kind and I don't know. Everything comes through my Butler filter. And Butler is like Gonzaga, a little school that doesn't get all the respect it deserves. Gonzaga gets more than Butler does, so I hate them for that reason, too. It's not a rational thought, but none of this is.
Well, Gonzaga actually wins more games than Butler, I think, too.
At least okay. Fine. You can have that.
Not to put too fine a point on it.
So this big nor'easter snowstorm that hit the East Coast yesterday. By the way, we'll be talking about President Trump, the budget cuts and the budget additions. I mean, it's not all bad news. If you make tanks, you're whistling Dixie today. But we'll talk about the president's budget proposal in the 2 o'clock hour. On this show, we have so far carved out the 2 o'clock to 2:30 segment is our Trump talk place. And so all of those things, presidential and Rachel Maddow, for that matter, go there. And by the way, the late night comics sure had their way with Rachel Maddow last night. Turnabout's fair play, and we'll play some of that as well. That'll be at 2 o'clock. But I just for a minute then, while I've got this time, wanted to just talk about what I think is a very interesting story today. So the nor'easter was coming down on the East Coast, and from Washington through Boston and New York, they said they were going to get hit with feet of snow. They used the word massive to describe the dump that was going to be hitting on these major metropolitan areas. And since the media is located in the East, weather in Philadelphia, New York, and Boston and Washington, I think, always gets overreported. And then on top of that, it turned out to be this massive snowstorm coming. But they had two sets of models, and one of them said it might not be so bad, and then another one said that it could be very bad. Rather than hedge their bets, I'm reading from Washington Post now, the Weather Service doubled down on its predictions for snowfall totals of 8 to 12 inches in Philadelphia, 12 to 18 inches, a foot and a half forecast for New York, etc. The Weather Service offices decided that it was best to remain on the high side of the forecast snowfall in the event the rain-snow line remained just east of the major cities, which was still a possibility, it said in a statement. This is the point. They were pretty sure that it wasn't going to be as bad as it was, but they wanted everybody to be cautious, and so they continued to report the worst-case scenario. The next day, like today, people were looking around going, okay, we got 6 inches, that's not great, but where is this massive, crippling snowstorm that caused us to not go to work, stay off the highways, schools closed, etc.? Politicians and thought leaders, again, I'm reading from the Washington Post, pounced, quote, I don't know how much we should be paying these weather guys, said Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey. I've had my fill of the National Weather Service after 7.5 years, to tell you the truth. Matt Drudge tweeted, what is going on with National Weather Service? Lots of misses piling up, overreaction by governments, bad forecasting, troubling trend. Even before the storm hit, President Donald Trump expressed skepticism about the National Weather Service forecast. He wrote, "Let's hope it's not going to be as bad as some people are predicting. Usually it isn't." I think that this is an interesting story because the Weather Service completely made a mistake. If they want to help people, they should report the information accurately that they have and then let everybody else decide what to do with it. You're not anybody's mommy, and you lose credibility when you get it wrong. I think weather forecasting is probably a pretty difficult thing to do, and we seem to remember the misses more than the hits, but I don't think you're buying any favors from people when you say, hey, the good news is it's not as bad as it was. That's not your job. That's my job. Your job is to just tell me, oh, as it turns out, it's not going to be that bad. And then we'll make the informed decisions as best we can. Do you agree with me on that, Steve? Am I making any sense there? Don't you think that is a bad move on their part to go with the worst possible scenario as the gospel for everybody?
Well, they did have a model supporting what they said, right?
Sure. But if you asked them, what do you think is going to happen in New York? They would have said 6 to 8 inches, not 16 to 18 inches.
Yeah, you're right. If we're going to put our faith in science and ask other people to do that, then they should just give us the science.
And then let us decide. And then maybe it'll be, here's the heck of it, is that suppose then it did kind of drift into the city. We would have been beating them up because we would have said, you should have told us it was going to be worse. Boy, you got this one wrong.
And was it a Binghamton? They got almost 4 feet of snow?
And some people did get over 3 feet of snow. Yeah, 38 inches or something like that. There ain't many people in Binghamton. They're all in New York and Philadelphia.
Yeah, well, they're all under snow right now.
And it reminded me a little bit. I don't know how this informs this conversation, but you remember February of 2011, February 1st, 2011? Do you remember what happened in Chicago?
Was that the big storm here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were all on the radio in this showcase studio saying, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. It's going to hit like at noon. Get out of Dodge. And it came about noon or whatever it was. And we kind of said, don't go on Lakeshore Drive, because if you do, you will not get off of Lakeshore Drive. We had this massive car jam on Lakeshore Drive. Buses were stopped on Lake. You remember this story, right? It was kind of fun in a way if you weren't on Lakeshore Drive. But it was amazing to me how many people got caught in that snowstorm. And there we were kind of warning you that this could happen, and people weren't believing it. They're going, I'll just take my chances. I drove to work. I'm going to drive home. And then there was a couple of accidents, and the cars couldn't get through, and people literally got snowed under. There were 60-mile-an-hour winds that day. People would get out of their cars, which you're not supposed to do, but some people were in there for several hours. So they walk out of their cars, and you could not – I remember people telling the stories. I mean, you might have known east from west. You would have figured it out when you hit the lake, but you had no idea where you were going. You're on Michigan Avenue or Lakeshore Drive in downtown Chicago. And yet you could have been, in North Dakota somewhere. It was that blinding. You didn't know where you were or where you were going.
I drove in the next day because the trains weren't running. it's like, because they had offered, they said, hey, why don't you stay downtown at a hotel? I'm like, no, I'll take the train tomorrow. I'll be fine. So I took the train home that day.
Yeah.
And then the next morning I get up and go to the train station to try to come to work. And I had to be at work and the trains weren't running. So I ended up driving.
Oh, you did?
I did.
And it was quite how did that go?
Well, it was quite an adventure. There weren't a lot of me out there.
That's the thing. It was so cool because I stayed downtown that night. I did the show, stayed downtown, just right here at the Intercontinental, and walked back to work the next day, like across the street. And it was like a ghost town. It was just so interesting to see Chicago with no cars. It was like a movie. The highways were, where you could travel on them, they were empty. Everybody was helping everybody out. There was that, what's the spirit, the bonhomie, everybody was helping each other out. It was kind of fun to be in the storm. But I just want to go back to what the National Weather Service did out east. They knew the storm wasn't going to be that bad, and they decided it would be better for all of us if they said it's going to be really, really bad. Everybody go home. Everybody stay home. And I'm just looking for some thought and reaction to that. 312-981-7200 is my phone number. I'll start with Marlene. this is funny. Marlene, you're on the air. Hi, how are you?
Hi, okay. I'm so glad to hear you back.
Thank you.
Well, I remember it so differently. Gary Meyer was on, and people were calling. I'm at work. I think I should leave earlier. Maybe I shouldn't go. I'm on the evening shift. And he's giving them, oh, you are so lucky you have a job. People would love to have your job. And I swear he kept people at work when they should have gone home.
Oh, really? He was saying, so that you have a job, you should appreciate that. You shouldn't take off early. You should stay at work downtown. Is that what Gary was saying?
If you've got it on tape,
yes. Oh, man. I'm shocked to hear that Gary would lead people astray that way, but that's a, I don't remember it that way. Oh, that's funny.
He had attitude sometimes. Okay. I liked him, but that day I didn't.
Yeah. Thanks, Marlene. Have a good day. Yeah, I don't remember that. I personally was, this is the point I wanted to make about that. I'm not in the habit of telling people what to do. I know a lot of weather guys love to give advice. I think that's a mistake. Any meteorologist I've worked in Peoria, in Minneapolis, in Chicago, most of them will say, you better stay home or you better leave early. And I guess to a degree that's helpful. But at the end, but I really think they should say the roads are going to be slick, or we're going to get a foot of snow, or we're going to get 6 inches of snow. It's not going to be that bad. And then let people make their own decisions. It's completely up to them. I don't think you will hear me say, don't go to work today, or don't go to the game, or don't do what you want to do. Some people got to do those things. I'll give you the information. You make up your own mind. It's 122. This is WGN. WGN Radio News with C. Bertrand right around the corner. We'll also update you on the NCAA games. Gonzaga's losing?
Yeah.
I saw 17-17. What did you just see?
You did? Well, I've got 15-14, so one of us is in trouble.
I think you're on more of a delay than I am.
Okay.
And Notre Dame, 59, Princeton, 56. Am I seeing that right with 14 seconds left?
No, they won. That game is over.
And who won that game?
Notre Dame won the game.
Oh!
60-58.
Sam Holtz, my 14-year-old whiz-bang, said that he liked Princeton in that game. He was almost right. And he also had the 12-5 on that UVA game. He had...
I got that one. It's not working out so well right now.
He has Virginia, the 5, losing to UNC Wilmington. What's the score on that one?
Well, by my scoreboard, they're up 7 right now with 8:45 left.
But you're in a time warp.
I don't know why. I'm on a pretty up-to-date website.
Yeah, maybe I just completely made that up and there was no factual basis to what I was saying. How do opioids get to the Chicago area? Follow the trail to the world's busiest border crossing. Hijack the opioid addiction crisis tonight on WGN-TV News at 9. Also, the Midwestern University Multispecialty Clinic in Downers Grove offers a comprehensive, patient-centered health care experience at their family medicine clinic, at the Speech Language Institute, the Physical Therapy Institute, Dental Institute, and Eye Institute. At their clinics, you'll receive quality care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Learn more at mwuclinics.com or call 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic, your family's home for health care. This texter says, hey, John, did you see Paul Conrad's meltdown about the accuracy of the forecasting the other day? I did not see that. I presume he was talking about this. I don't know. I don't know what he said, but he's always good. He's pretty funny. John, forget about the Weather Service. How about municipalities that are watching the same radar that we can all see, and they still don't put the plows on the road? Everybody's a weatherman now, too. Everybody seems to go, well, I don't think that one's going to come in for an hour. You know, I always thought that those people went to college, got degrees, and kind of knew stuff we don't.
Yeah, it's common sense.
And so they go, no, the dark red thing is bad, right. And the more of those are, the worse.
Pink is snow. I can see that.
John, we had new kitchen cabinets delivered the day of that snowstorm in February. Just got to work on that. Quite a memory. It snowed for 3 days. What was the other one I wanted to mention here? Anyway, we'll pick up a couple of phone lines. We'll start with Bob. You're on WGN. Bob, what can we do for you? You're on the air.
Well, I just wondered if anybody noticed this besides me. The Weather Service tends to give you the weather in New York when we're experiencing a snowstorm here in Chicago.
Yeah, right.
They'll preempt the weather on the 8th, in order to give us the weather in New York. So we don't get to know what our weather is because apparently there's more important people than Chicagoans at that point.
I know.
Same thing at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're not going to get a weather on the 8th. You're going to get why planes crash or something like that. And if you got a storm ripping through, you'd rather just, like, see the weather.
Are you going to tell them or?
That we don't do weather on the 8th?
Not so much.
Yeah. No, but if your point, Bob, is the weather channel
I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If you're tuning in to try to see the weather, they're the only ones that have the weather 24 hours.
Oh.
And basically, we got New York weather, and we were getting 9 inches of snow, but New York's weather was more important than to even give us the weather on the 8th.
Makes you feel like flyover land, doesn't it?
Yep. Well, you know, there's more important people than Chicago.
Evidently. No, I hate that. I mean, you see that all the time. Ask sports fans if they think there's an East Coast bias to ESPN or, for that matter, any national sports coverage. Thank you, Bob. Peggy, you're on the air. You're on WGN. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just wanted to say, ever since we've had the Doppler radar, Gary Taft, Tom Skilling, and Larry Maher never, ever seem to get it right. Now, I would imagine they're spending a lot of money for Doppler radar, and they're not getting it right. They never get it right.
They're not setting it right?
They're not saying it right.
Saying it right, yeah. They don't know how to read the thing?
I don't think Tom knows what he's doing.
Thanks for the call. I had never noticed that, Peggy, but since they got Doppler radar, do they still have around here, Steve, or did they ever this, like, a block-by-block forecast?
Not that I know of.
Somebody have that where it was so sophisticated? I'm not making this up, that they could tell you, like, you know, it's not just going to hit Chicago on the south side, but, you know, they would actually almost give you street addresses where the storm was coming through.
I haven't seen it. My wife has an app that she loves. It's storms. I don't know.
Something that does something like that.
Yeah,
there is something
rain
like that.
Rain falling in 6 minutes.
Yes, exactly. That technology exists. I don't know how good it is all of the time. John, that storm that you were talking about that shut down Lakeshore Drive was the storm where you sent pizzas to the stalled folks. I'll never forget how you did that. It was absolutely great. That's why you're on the air. Yeah, I do remember that.
Was that the same storm?
Well, this person says, I remember sending, but we didn't send them out to Lakeshore Drive.
It
I think we sent them out to people off I-80. Yeah, downstate and west. And we sent a young woman called in and said, I'll deliver the pizzas to people because they're out there and they haven't been able to eat for a day. And so we said, okay, we'll pay for the pizzas. And she got pizzas, and then she drove her car up and down like I-80, handing pizzas out to stranded drivers, and we paid for them. And some people thought that was awesome, and some people were very angry at us for putting that young woman in harm's way. But she was a star on our show ever since. I said at the beginning of the broadcast this afternoon, I don't know who I'm happier for, the players, the coach, the fans, or Dave Ennett. I mean, how many games has Dave Ennett done? And he wasn't able to go to the NCAA tournament as a broadcaster for Northwestern. He's there now, and he's here now on WGN. Dave, this is John, and how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great, John. And just to give you a little update, I'm watching South Dakota State and Gonzaga here in Salt Lake City. And South Dakota State is definitely not only hanging with them, but has a 3-point lead. We just had the under 4-minute timeout. It's 22-19. The Jackrabbits in front of the top seed.
16-1. And does it look like they can play with them, or do you get the feeling that Gonzaga's...
Gonzaga's good, and they're very big inside. But, I mean, so far South Dakota State can shoot, and they get out and run a little bit. So, they've gotten this far. So, the next 3 minutes, if they can get to halftime and either have the lead or even be within single digits, you never know.
But they're leading right now. They're up right now.
They're up 22-19 right now.
Wow.
And Gonzaga just missed a free throw. So,
I have Gonzaga losing this game in my bracket.
Well, good call on your part, John. Yeah,
because they're only playing a half, right?
It's a good call with 3 minutes left in the first half.
Yes.
Why do you have to keep bringing stuff like that up, Steve? Can you just let a guy enjoy this for a minute? I was going to ask you one other thing about that. Oh, yeah, Dave, I suppose this is the way these kind of games normally go. The 16, you know, the 12 seed, whatever, they got nothing to lose. They're loose. Expectations are low, so they play free. Mm-hmm. Then it gets towards the end of the second half, and they go, hokey smokes, we got a shot of winning this game. And then they start to tense up a little bit, and the bigger, better team almost always wins these games.
Well, that's what has happened historically. And even the 12-5 game between Notre Dame and Princeton, Princeton's a good team, very well coached. And, you know, they got down early in the second half. They were looked like Notre Dame was going to pull away. And then Princeton ended up falling short by, what, 2 points. So you never know.
Are you?
But yeah, I mean, but in the 1 versus 16 matchups, that is traditionally how it's going.
Yeah. Are you nervous, Dave?
Am I nervous? I guess I would be less than honest, John, if I said I wasn't feeling it a little bit. Because I've never done this. I mean, this team has never played an NCAA tournament game. And, yeah, I mean, it's so big for the program, and it's such a big moment, I think, for everybody who's been associated with them. I'm nervous for these kids who are going to be out there on the court in a little while, a couple of hours, and for the coaches. They've worked so hard to get to this point, and I know how badly people want to see them succeed, except for the – obviously, the Vanderbilt side.
Not so much them.
But, yeah, I mean, this is a big deal.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, so you're you guys start at 3:30, right?
Correct.
No.
And by the way, Gonzaga just took the lead.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. So what's your vantage point? Tell me a little bit about the lay of the land there. Is that place packed or is it kind of sparse?
It's good crowd, very good crowd. For first round, you know, you have some teams that geographically it was fairly easy for them to get here. The two top seeds, you have Gonzaga, you have Arizona, which is playing in the later session. So a lot of fans here, but this place is pretty well full, I think, for this first session. And a big group of Northwestern fans just arrived via charter from Chicago and just walked into the arena, including my wife, who I haven't seen yet. So there's going to be a pretty good Northwestern representation here.
Do you have any sense of how this game will go, Dave?
I do. You know, I think it all depends really on whether Northwestern can come out and not feel the pressure of all these years of waiting for this day and the anticipation of this moment. And whether they can come out and knock down some early shots, because I think that, you know, defense can win a lot of games for you. Northwestern is a very good defensive team. Vanderbilt used defense to kind of turn their season around, but they're basically a perimeter oriented team. They're a great 3-point shooting team. They set a school record for 3-pointers this year. They led the Southeastern Conference in 3-pointers per game. But Northwestern's been good at defending the three, and if they can do it here today, I think Northwestern's a very good team. You know, I think they've shown that, John, with their wins on Friday night over Maryland, the win at Wisconsin, some of their early season wins beating Dayton at the United Center. So they're the 8th seed, and Vanderbilt's the 9th seed.
Yeah, right, it's an 8-9.
The selection committee considers them the better, slightly better team, even though the odds makers might not.
Yeah, right. Tell me if you think this is a factor in the coach's mind. Like, he's worried that the players of the program are thinking like this: we made it, we got there, and that's the accomplishment that we were striving for. That might undermine, you know, your, I don't know, focus to win this game, because you've already felt like you've accomplished so much.
I think Chris Collins has been doing his best to dissuade any guys from thinking that way, and to make it clear that it's great to get here, but now that you've gotten to the dance, you want to stay for a few songs. Yeah. I believe that was his exact quote. And look, his experience in the NCAA tournament, I think, is invaluable to Northwestern. I mean, he's played in NCAA games. He's played in an NCAA championship game. He's coached in championship games. So he's been an assistant coach for countless NCAA tournament games. So I think that helps, because I think he knows a pretty good recipe for getting a team ready to play in the postseason. Hmm. And so we're going to find out here in just a little while. But I don't think this team is thinking about, well, we're glad to be here. Let's just go out there and have some fun. And yeah, I mean, they do look at it as let's go out and have some fun. But I don't think this is, as Chris has said, this is not the end game for them.
Well, so if they win this game, then they'll have to play South Dakota State, which is going to beat Gonzaga. So that'll be nice because they could probably beat South Dakota State. And then they'd have to take on probably Notre Dame or West Virginia, I'm thinking. Yeah.
Well, you know, they played Notre Dame early in the year, and they really should have won that game. So I'd love to see that matchup again if it were to come to that. But I'm not sold yet on South Dakota State beating Gonzaga. Let's see how the second half.
They were winning earlier. I can't imagine the second half will be any different than the first, and they'll probably win the game.
That never happens. That never happens.
Well, Dave, I'm just really happy for you.
It's Gonzaga by four at 26-22.
All right.
With a half a minute to go in the first half.
Who's got the ball? Do a little play-by-play for us, Dave.
Well, actually, I'm just off the court right now. But I will tell you that, South Dakota State has needs a basket right now. They they had a 22-16 lead, and now they're down 22-19 lead. Now they're down 26-22. They've got the basketball.
Okay. All right. Well, so good luck to them.
They're holding for the final shot of that.
Hey, Dave, I just want to tell you, Dave, I'm just really happy for you. I hope that this is as fun. How many games have you done for Northwestern over the years?
Well, I mean, it's 21, 22 years, something like that. So,
say 21 times,
them up.
Probably 30 games a season. So it's
roughly
over 600 games. So,
I would guess somewhere like that.
So enjoy the moment, Dave. Have a great call, and I hope they win, and I hope you have a terrific time and a terrific call of the game.
Thank you, John.
All right. I'll let you go see your wife, give her our best, give everybody our best, and have a great game, Dave.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
It's Dave Ennett. Have a great game. Like he's playing, but he kind of is. He's doing his thing, too. Boy, it'd be sure nice to see South Dakota State win that game. WGN. You know, Virginia's about to beat UNC Wilmington. That's the 5-12, and some people liked UNC Wilmington in that one, but they're up.
Some people would be me.
76-71 with a few seconds left here. What is it? 7-6-5-4. So Virginia beats UNC Wilmington 76-71. Butler's still winning 41-27. Notre Dame won. And Gonzaga at the half is up 26-22 over South Dakota State. That's kind of the latest on that. By the way, Steve, I'm kind of new, having only been back for a few days now, and I'm seeing stories about this idea from Senator Andy Mayner of Bunker Hill to make it easier to register to vote, right? You'd go get your driver's license, and you could register there to get your driver's license to vote.
Yeah, not only that, it would be almost automatic when you went to some of these places. So you could opt out of the automatic registration, but if you don't, then when you go to certain agencies and fill out paperwork, do what you need to do.
You'll automatically be registered to vote.
They'll automatically put you on the rolls.
Why would you want to opt out of that?
Well, maybe you don't want to be registered. I don't know. People think they do that. I don't even know. Do they take jury pools from registered voters? Or
yeah, maybe some reason maybe you don't want to be in there. Maybe
you want to claim this democracy.
Well, I guess I know. So you get to be a contrarian. I guess I get that.
How do I get out?
And then, yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. So then, if I go to the Health and Human Services office or some other state agencies, I might by interacting with them automatically be registered as a voter in Illinois.
Right. Right.
And is that controversial by any stretch?
Well, it passed the legislature last year, a version of it, and Governor Rauner vetoed it. At the time, he was citing security and reasons like that. He said, that it needed to be tightened. Andy Mayner says he's tightened it, so they're bringing it up again.
Yeah. I don't see why people would be against it. I mean, I know we don't want people to vote illegally, but presumably if you're an illegal potential voter, you wouldn't be getting your driver's license. I'm just thinking of that right now.
Right. I mean, you would think we would be better off with the most registered voters possible. If you meet the standards, it'd be nice if you were registered.
You know what that reminds me a little bit of? In Minnesota, they have permitless carry, and I'm sure Illinois doesn't have this now. I've been doing radio shows in these two states for the last 10 years. I'm kind of ping-ponging back and forth sometimes with who's doing what. But in Minnesota right now, they're pushing forward permitless carry. And this is what that would allow, that you would, by virtue of being a good standing citizen, automatically be able to carry a weapon on your person. You'd be able to carry it in the parks and in the streets and wherever you go.
So no training required or anything like that?
Correct. And the idea is that the Second Amendment grants you the right to bear arms. That's an automatic right that you have as a citizen of the United States.
And that's coming out of Minnesota?
Yeah. Yeah, think about that. So the same way we don't say, well, you need to go to training to do speech, or you don't need to go to training to do practice your religion. In that same Bill of Rights, you have the Second Amendment, which says that you have a right to bear arms. So if there was extraordinary circumstances, like you were a felon or something else, then we'll rescind your right to bear arms, maybe, or modify it. Maybe you're too young. But basically, if you're 18 years old and you're a good standing citizen, you get to carry a gun with you, and you don't have to register it, and you don't have to be trained on it. That's a constitutional right. What an interesting idea, eh? And so that's kind of where they're going on that. And it, I don't know, for some reason, it reminds me of the voter registration thing. That is, as a citizen, you sort of automatically have the right to vote. Should the onus be on you to prove that, or should it be on the state to prove that you can't vote? And that's kind of fundamentally where this is in Illinois. And that's exactly where they are, but on a different place in Minnesota. They're saying you have the right to carry a gun. You can carry the gun anytime you want. You don't have to prove that to
anybody. But there's still registration here, right? I mean, so you're still – but if it was a perfect analogy, then you could just – you wouldn't even have to be registered. You'd go to the polling place, and they'd have to prove that you couldn't vote.
Well, but that's about the way it is now.
Yeah.
I mean, you can register at the polls to vote, too. I guess the point is, how easy do you want to make it? Shouldn't you make it as easy as possible? And I appreciate that there's two sides to that. Some people worry much about the threat of people voting who shouldn't, or voting twice. Why do you laugh?
Well, I just wonder how far are we in this investigation of the 3 million illegal voters?
Yeah, that kind of went away, didn't it? We really haven't heard much about that lately. I'm sure people are working diligently on that.
I mean, I laugh because there isn't really much evidence of a lot of voter fraud in this country. So I don't know why you wouldn't make it easier to vote.
Well, that's why I brought that up. In Illinois, it looks like they're working on that again. See what the governor thinks about it. All right, thank you, Steve. I'd like to see Illinois State win the NIT. A lot of folks wanted them to be in the NCAA tournament, me included. That didn't happen, so go in the NIT and tell them that they were wrong. That's the only consolation prize you can have. It's 2:10 on WGN. Hi, it's John Williams. The sun is shining on Michigan Avenue. I hope it is where you are, too. Might not be if you work for the National Endowment of Arts, the EPA, the Department of State Labor, Agriculture, all of those. You saw the headline in the USA Today, the big losers. And then the winners are Defense, Homeland Security, Veterans Affairs, the SBA.
I mean, that's right. If you had to play pin the tail on the donkey and what you would expect, you know, what Donald Trump campaigned on, that's it.
In our Mincing Rascals podcast we recorded today and that we'll be putting up, we had a pretty vigorous discussion about this, and in principle, are people, you know, supporting this? Is he doing the will of the people by virtue of the election or not? We reached out to Andy Field, the ABC News reporter in Washington, to talk a little bit about the president's budget proposal. Hi, Andy. You're on WGN.
Well, always good to be on in Chicago. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're doing well. So if you're in D.C., you didn't get as much snow as you thought, but a few inches, huh?
Well, no one ever gets as much as Chicago. I lived in Green Bay for 3 years, so we would come down to Chicago to see a little less snow.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, even less, I guess, in D.C. Now, talk to me about this budget. Were people surprised by the sort of pitch that the president is making, or is this what everybody thought it was going to be?
Well, there are a lot of things that contradict what he said during the campaign. Let's first of all start with health care. He talked about the fact that he wants health care for everyone. He's not going to cut Medicaid. He's not going to cut Medicare. That is not what's in the health care budget, and not what the Congressional Budget Office says will happen, that older, sicker people are going to be kicked to the curb when it comes to being able to afford either insurance or paying their medical bills. So even though that's not this budget, that's part of the spending programs that are going to be happening over the next year or so here.
Yeah.
When it comes to the budget, you mentioned the National Endowment of the Arts, and pretty much he's nuking that department, basically kicking Bert and Ernie and all of Sesame Street to the curb. Local theaters that, especially in Chicago, that rely on this here, the thriving theater community there, arts projects, all of these things will no longer get money from the federal government if he gets his way and basically kills this program.
And I think advocates for his proposal are saying that's okay because that will only encourage people to make private charitable donations to the arts. For instance, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting doesn't really depend on federal money anyway, and if we take it away from the government but put it more in the hands of the people, maybe that's where the arts should be.
Well, it already is. There are a lot of foundations and private donations there. But the government, and this is a tiny sliver of the government program, $300 million. There are estimates of what it cost President Obama just to go down to Mar-a-Lago every week. And if he continues the pace that he's at right now, that would have paid for all of the National Arts Endowment there. But they need that money. I mean, the budgets are really, really thin. If you talk to your local PBS station in terms of how they stay on the air, the budgets are really, really tight, and they can't afford to lose this money.
Well, just to that point then, Andy, do you think that the president's gutting of NEA or asking the Congress to is in principle? That is, he knows it's not a lot of money, but he's just making a statement here?
It's really hard to read the president's mind because he puts a lot of things in quotes. When he's tweeting things, he said he was wiretapped, and then later on he goes, well, I put that in quotes. I didn't really mean I was wiretapped.
Yeah, sure.
So it's very hard to discern what he means because we have his spokespeople coming out every day going, no, that's not what the president meant. This is what he meant.
Whatever. Let's go to the other side of the equation, though. Defense spending would go up 10%. Can you talk a little bit about that? How is that going to happen? What is that going to mean?
Well, even the Defense Department doesn't know where that money is going to go, other than some jets that the president has talked about here. And there are some hawks in Congress, including Senator John McCain, who goes, it's not even enough. They need to add even more. But if you're spending all your money on defense, on Veterans Affairs and Homeland Security, you are defending a country that is significantly poorer in terms of helping its own people. And the cuts across the board, almost a third of the Environmental Protection Agency, almost a third of the State Department will be cut, a fifth of the Agriculture Department, a fifth of the Labor Department. These are enormous cuts, and we've never seen cuts like this before, and it's not likely that it's going to get through the House and Senate because there are a number of Republicans. Let's say, for example, even the Transportation Department, where there's going to be another big cut here, 13% cut. Amtrak that goes across country, long lines that go from Washington, D.C. through Chicago across the country, money for that would be cut. So the trains that people like to go from Chicago to other places, they may not exist anymore because the money won't be there to subsidize them.
Is it possible, though, that, I mean, every characterization I've heard of the president's budget, and I'm not speaking about you, Andy, but more analyses that I'm reading online and in newspapers, are pretty negative about this. Oh, my God, you know, the NEA is going to go and the EPA is going to be gutted, et cetera, and we're spending more on defense than we need. That's sort of the rhetoric of it generally. But Donald Trump won campaigning on things like this, strong defense and shoring up our borders, more money for Homeland Security. I suspect there are plenty of people looking at this and saying, hooray, this is exactly what we wanted.
Well, there's certainly a number of Republicans in the House and Senate who are saying that, but when it comes down to people's own pocketbooks, when they find out that their local waters are polluted or their air is more polluted or the agriculture subsidies that farmers in rural Illinois, for example, count on are no longer there, they may start to get pretty angry, and they're the folks that voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah, I've kind of wondered about that. I think if you go back to the health care conversation, the red states use more health care from Obama than the blue states. And you'd think if some of these things actually, you know, get enacted, they're going to feel the pinch maybe more than they knew as a result of having voted for Donald Trump. I'm not sure, though, that people looking at any of these things, healthcare or defense spending or less spending on the environment, I'm still not sure that, to be honest with you, Andy, I don't know how people feel about that.
Well, I'm not sure that, you know, it hasn't been out long enough for people to do a survey. One of the things that's very interesting is that the president campaigned on being the president who is going to, quote, eliminate disease. He goes, we're going to have research programs to do that. They are gutting programs at National Institutes of Health, which is the primary research arm for finding cures for diseases, and they fund other doctors and researchers around the world and around the U.S. to find these cures. You know, we remember Ebola from a couple of years ago, and everyone was terrified that we were all going to die of Ebola. If it wasn't for research at NIH and for the Centers for Disease Control in terms of having antiviral methods, they would not have saved a couple of the people who did survive being exposed to Ebola. And you notice that the only people that survived were the ones who lived here in the U.S. and had access to that care and that research, not the poor people who got the disease and that virus in Africa.
How does this work, Andy? The president issues a budget proposal, then Congress has to vote on it? I mean, I wonder exactly what the machinations are of all of that.
Well, typically the president presents the budget to the House, and all the spending bills originate in the House. The House can either accept it, they can reject it, they come up with their own. Typically, for the last 8 years, every time President Obama issued a budget, the chorus from the Capitol, especially the Republicans in charge, were dead on arrival.
Yeah.
Well, now you're hearing the same thing, not only from Democrats, but some Republicans as well.
So how does that go then? I mean, so then the president says, this is what I want. And they say, well, we're not going to do that. So then they'll kick it around and generate their own version of this. Is this the sort of the blueprint from which they at least work?
It's absolutely the blueprint they work from, but I can pretty much guarantee you that some of these draconian cuts will not make it through the sausage machine on Capitol Hill by the end of this year.
Yeah. Well, I guess it goes back to my question earlier, too. Don't you suppose the president knows that, and he's just sending a message? He's like telling the base, I told you I'd be for defense. I told you I'd be for Homeland Security. I told you we wouldn't fund the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, but the Congress went ahead and did it anyway.
Well, that's a possibility, but here's the problem, and this is the thing that's a bit troublesome, that when you see President Trump going to these campaign-style rallies that don't seem to do anything but massage his ego, which is what he was doing in Nashville yesterday.
Yeah, it was in Tennessee.
Where a bunch of supporters were there. He's not running for office anymore. He's actually governing now, and governing requires an extraordinary amount of compromise. And it's looking out not just for the people who voted for you, but for all of the people in the United States. And the question is here, is that going to happen, or is he simply going to be fulfilling campaign promises to the folks that voted for him? When it comes to the popular vote, 3 million fewer people than voted for his opponent.
Can you just comment on this, and then I'll let you go, Andy? And that is, my understanding is the way the budget was put together was that his team sort of culled through his speeches and previous remarks and then sort of divined what his intent was, and then they built this budget around it. Is that sort of the way it went?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, but his budget director actually is speaking right now at the White House, probably answering some of those questions because we haven't had a chance to talk to him yet. But that certainly is a possibility. But other administrations have had a lot of people in place to do these things, not only once they get into office, but before they get into office. President Trump seems to be unique in this situation where those staffs are pretty thin and there's just a very small group of people at the top that seem to be making these decisions.
Well, then we'll catch up again soon. Andy, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thank you.
Andy Field, ABC News in Washington. Yeah, we were going to visit with one of his colleagues. She was in the White House press briefing room. Sean Spicer's briefing was supposed to be over by now. She would have been able to join us. But that either got a late start or it's been going long. But, you know, let me just throw this out at you, and you can give us a call. And that is, let's just take the Corporation for Public Broadcasting again. It's something that we talked about in the Mincing Rascals podcast. If you say government is too big, and you do, and then you're going to make cuts, then somebody's ox is going to get gored. And so while you might not like the look of this front page of the Sun-Times, USA Today, or Tribune today, that's what's going to happen. You can't say we want cuts and then cry when cuts start to happen. Now it's just, okay, well, who gets cut how much and what do you fund maybe a little bit more? This is what the president wants. I wonder what you think about that. My number is 312-981-7200. Here's just another quick update for you in the NCAAs. The Notre Dame-Princeton game, Notre Dame beat Princeton. Virginia beat UNC Wilmington. That was the 12-5. Butler is beating Winthrop. They were up, but they just went to commercial break by about 15 late in that game. Looks like Butler's going to win. Gonzaga and South Dakota State were tied at 19-19 in the first half. And then they didn't end the game there, which is what I wanted to have happen.
Right.
Since then, Gonzaga's gone on a 21-9 run.
But it's still early in the second half, right, John?
So the South Dakota State still got plenty of time. 40-28 is the score of that game. And then West Virginia, Bucknell, and Florida, East Tennessee State. I don't have any scores for you on those just yet. Steve will maybe update you on some of that in a couple of minutes here. One other thing I was going to mention. Oh, yeah, so get a load of this. Speaking of the Trump administration, so the I don't know that this reflects on them necessarily. I don't know how this happened. But Elif thought that it would be interesting, my producer, to get somebody from the OMB to come on and talk a little bit about how the budget works and where this money's going. And I thought, oh, that sounds like a good idea. If somebody from the Office of Management and Budget can talk to us about that, that would be a good idea. So we went online and found the new person that's in charge and went to their webpage. And at the bottom, it says media inquiries. And so we called that phone number. They've listed the wrong phone number. And there's a woman named Julie who's getting phone calls from people all over the United States. And I'll tell you right now, she's sick and tired of it.
Well, what does she think of the budget? Did she have anything to say?
So Elif called and she goes, oh, I'm sorry. Okay, goodbye. Click. I said, what was that? And she told me what happened. I said, well, let's call her back. Ask her to come on and tell us what her day's been like. So I called Julie back with the not Office of Management and Budget or whatever the OMB is. And she says, I'm not with those people. I can't tell you. And I said, no, no, no. I said, that's okay. I just want to tell me what your day is like and what's been going on and how long has this number been wrong? And she said, nope, nope, I'm not talking about it. And I said, no, I'm going to try and help you here by telling people not to call you, but just give me a quick interview. And she's literally got the phone away from her, and she goes, I'm not talking on the radio. She was very distressed, and I said, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, goodbye. It's about the details, Steve. They misspelled a word on the president's poster. The details matter.
Well, we'll see if they do. I don't know. I mean,
well, that's right. That's right. Maybe they don't. Maybe they don't. But I think they do.
I like the way you played that whole thing where it'd be good for her. You're going to help her.
I know. That was my pitch. What a crock, right?
Because help me help you.
I know. I thought if you give me this interview, that was my pitch. And she was smart enough to hang up on me.
Senator Durbin listens.
I know. I thought, really, who's going to listen to this and therefore not call her? But that was that was all I had. It was in a crutch. I thought maybe, because in a way, I thought she'd think it was kind of crazy. And sort of fun.
Have fun with it,
And come on and go, oh boy, John, I just talked to radio stations all over the world and newspapers and citizens, and here's what I've been hearing. She wanted nothing to do with that. Mike Royko had a piece he wrote years ago where it was like AT&T or somebody changed their phone number. Anyway, he was getting phone calls at the Sun-Times. And he finally started to pretend that he was the agency people were calling. And he would say things like, yeah, we're going to disconnect your phones in 20 minutes. That's the way it is. And, you know, and he didn't care. And he wrote a whole thing about it. It was perfectly Royko. Okay, a couple of phone calls here. Let's start with Gene. You're on WGN. Gene, what did you want to say? Thanks for holding.
Hi, John. All of your conversation that just preceded this reminds me of what Obama said. Elections have consequences.
Yeah.
And boy, do they ever. And I think that atrocious amount of money going for defense, when there's probably not a scintilla of a plan for wisely using it, is ridiculous. And can you imagine what the Republicans, the howl that would go up if PBS was in the news for having been bribing companies and let companies bribe them and giving $22,000 dinners and setting up hotel rooms with prostitutes? Can you even begin to imagine the black eye that the arts would get? The arts don't do things like that. They're scratching to survive. And every one of us that is a devotee of PBS stations and the wonderful content they provide, my life would be miserable without them. I can't even imagine. And I do pledge, but I certainly can't pledge enough to make up that hole. And, you know, how many families, kids have grown up on Sesame Street and you know, all of the wonderful programming they offer. I mean, that somebody wrote, and I can't remember which wise person it was, but he said, if we cut out all that, what is there to defend?
Yeah, actually, I've recently heard a version of that. Like, yeah, I understand your point. I appreciate your call. I'm late for the news. I'm going to pick up more phone lines in just a minute. And Elif just handed me the 1985 July 23rd piece Mike Royko wrote. Dial 1-800 or you pay a toll. And it's pretty funny. I'll give you a line or two from it. Oh, and speaking of funny, so the late night comics had their way with Rachel Maddow. At least they had the good sense to take after her as well. We'll let you hear some of that too. Coming up on GN. Pre-game coverage, Wildcat basketball right around the corner. How about that? Talked to Dave Enn a little while ago. I said, Dave, are you nervous? I mean, we kind of did some quick math and figured that he's done. I thought a lot of broadcasters know how many games they've done. Dave doesn't. But we figured it's over 600 Northwestern Wildcat basketball games. And in a very short while here, he'll be doing his very first Wildcat game in the NCAA tournament on WGN Radio. I said, Dave, I'm so excited for you. I'm happy for you. I said, are you nervous? And he said, well, I'm a little nervous for the guys. I don't want them to be nervous. I want them to have their game, you know, enjoy the moment. He didn't say he was nervous about broadcasting. Like, you know, maybe he'll forget some words, accidentally give a wrong name, stuff that I would do. He didn't seem to be worried about that.
He's done some big games.
You mean like big basketball games and football games and stuff like that?
Football games especially.
Yeah, I guess so, now that you mention it. It's not his first trip to the rodeo, but it is his first trip to this rodeo.
You know what's interesting? I mean, I'm really happy for him and for Northwestern.
Yeah.
I went with Emma to the Dayton Northwestern game at the United Center over the Christmas break.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dayton, there just weren't many Northwestern fans there.
Yeah.
There just weren't. And I'm assuming that, you know, it's easier to go to a game in Evanston for most, and that probably kept the crowd down. And there weren't many Chicago games for Dayton, so that influenced the crowd. But I know that they were selling out at the end of the year, so I just think it's great.
Well, that Tap Horn game, as it is known, that was sure fun. That was
the Tap Horn game, yeah.
Hey, by the way, you know, we were talking a little while ago about Mike Royko's piece. It just kind of came up in conversation, and Elif found it. And I just wanted to go over it just for a second here. I won't read the whole thing, but it's Mike Royko, July 23rd, 1985, and he wrote this. The phone rang, and the person on the other end asked, is this AT&T? It's Mike Royko's phone. The reason I bring this up is because the media number put out on the government website for questions about the budget. Everybody's talking about the budget, so we thought we'd get somebody to come on and talk from the administration about this. And they've got the wrong number posted. That distresses me more than it should, but they have the wrong phone number there. And so the woman's picking up her phone all day long, and she is not enjoying her 10 minutes of fame. And it reminded me of Royko. He said the phone rang, and the person on the other end asked, is this AT&T? Royko said, this happens to me about 25 or 30 times a day, sometimes even more. That's because AT&T has the same phone number as mine, except it is one of those toll-free 1-800 numbers. And if somebody in the Chicago area decides that he should not bother with the 1-800, he gets me instead of AT&T. When it first happened, I was mad at AT&T, but they said it wasn't their fault. The Illinois Bell had assigned me the number. Boy, this is dated, isn't it? It's 1985. So I got mad at Illinois Bell, but they said that they had no choice but to use existing numbers because there just aren't enough numbers to go around. That only left the callers for me to be mad at for neglecting to dial 1-800. So I began playing pranks on them, saying that, yes, I was AT&T, and how could I help them? My phone isn't working right, someone would say. Then bang it against the wall, I would tell them. If that doesn't work, you might chant a mantra that always makes me feel better. I wrote about it, hoping that enough people would see the column and remember to dial properly. But it did not help. From morning until night, the phone rings and I answer it and somebody asks, Is this the AT&T Service Center? Because I can't do anything about it, I use the calls to bring a bit of excitement into their lives. For example, Monday morning, a woman called and said, I want to get my phone repaired. What's wrong with it? Well, there's a buzzing noise. Well, who were you talking to when it made the buzzing noise? What's that got to do with it? Just answer my questions, ma'am. I can't help you if you don't help us. It happens when I talk to everybody, my friends, my daughter. Aha, he said. That explains it. Your daughter and your friends are making a buzzing sound at you. What are you talking about? She said. Sure, they're trying to make you think that you're baddies so they can have you committed, and then they'll divide up your wealth. And he went on like that. At the end, he says, once again, I ask you to please remember to dial 1-800 when calling that number because it's mine. Mike Royko. 2:45. We're talking about the budget with ABC. Let's just pick up a couple of quick phone lines here. Thanks for holding. Derek, you're on. I got the wrong line there. Let me go to Derek on line 3. You're on WGN. Hi, Derek. What can I do for you?
Well, you know, I was listening to your guys' conversation several minutes ago, and I took the two biggest takeaways. Three, I guess, that I'll tackle real quick.
Okay.
Number one is the budget increase for the defense. It just drives me crazy because the notion that we don't have a big enough military, just it blows my mind because we're so inflated there with so much bureaucratic waste that could be cut back and minimized that would help the budget so much more if we just focused on that rather than expanding.
Yeah.
But the two other things that the guest that you had on just before, he said, number one, you can't placate just to your base. You can't ignore the other people's grievances on the other side of the aisle. And even though he's placating to his base and going to them with these Muslim bans and things like that, his policies and his proposed budget is going to hurt his own base more than it's going to hurt the other side. And that just to me just doesn't make any sense because he's making it's like a him versus everybody else kind of deal. And that's what it seems like to me, especially with that rally last night. It was just I was watching and it was all him versus the rest of
those rallies. I don't understand. I'm going to say it one more time. I don't understand those rallies. I don't understand them. That's all I have to say about those, Derek. I don't understand those rallies. Except as our reporter said, Andy Field, he said, well, they're just. They do nothing but stroke his ego. And I don't know, maybe that whips up support for the budget. I mean, maybe somebody could explain to me why those are necessary or in some way helpful. But except that they make Donald Trump feel good, I don't understand the reason for the rallies. What was your third point, Derek?
It was kind of coupling with, you know, the health care. You can't cut all these health care for these people in these low-income areas. When you look at the map of who he is, you know, who his supporters are,
yeah,
like you said earlier, those are the people that benefited the most from the Obamacare system.
Yeah.
And when you cut them off, it's just hurting everybody. And it feels like he just doesn't really have an idea that he has to govern everybody in the country, not just who he wants to.
I really appreciate your listening. I really appreciate your call, Derek.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you very much.
Have a good day. It's 2:48. This is WGN.
Active but can't lose the weight? Losing a great deal of weight can be very difficult on your own, and sometimes diet and exercise are not enough. That's why Vista Health System provides online resources to help make your journey a success. Calculate your BMI, meet the team, and learn about a variety of topics. So take the first step and sign up for a free weight loss surgery seminar at VistaWeightLoss.com. That's VistaWeightLoss.com or call 847-558-6953.
We can beat them all.
Service to a green tea.
Hi, this is Tonya Khoury of Green Tea Windows. Increase the beauty and value of your home with our exceptional, energy-efficient, EPA-certified windows. They're made here in the U.S. with a lifetime warranty, and our installers have a minimum 7 years' experience. And listen to this. Our windows have the newest technology, self-cleaning glass. Yes, our special glass actually cleans itself. Dirt, dust, and water just rolls right off.
Service to a green tea.
There are so many deals out there for windows, but green tea can beat them all. Yes, green tea can beat any window deal and save you a lot of money. Plus, 0% financing is available. Call us now for details and a free estimate. Call 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
Green Tea Services. Service to a
green tea. 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
800-5-GREEN-TEA. Or greenteaservices.com.
If you think trains will stop if they see a car on the tracks, you're right, they will. About a mile after they hit you. In 2015 alone, 230 people were killed at railroad crossings. Don't become the next fatality. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Hi there. It's 2:50. I'm anxiously counting down the minutes here on GN Radio. You know, yesterday we spent some time in the 2 o'clock hour talking about Rachel Maddow's pretty ridiculous treatment of Donald Trump's taxes on MSNBC the other night. And I was interested in what the late night comics were going to say, because they're all firing off on Donald Trump left and right. But I think they were at least smart to give her due. She took some criticism. Actually, some of the cuts I'm about to play aren't as mean to her as I think generally they were. Jimmy Kimmel said about the snowstorm that wasn't so bad on the East Coast that Rachel Maddow reported it, but then actually it wasn't everything that you thought it was going to be. Something like that. Let's start with Seth Meyer last night.
Rachel Maddow aired an exclusive report last night uncovering a portion of President Trump's 2005 tax return, specifically the part where he claimed Ivanka and Donald Jr. as dependents and tried to write off Eric as a loss.
Jimmy Kimmel last night said this about the story.
On Twitter yesterday, Rachel Maddow wrote, "I have his tax returns. I will be revealing them on air." And, of course, everyone went nuts. This is how crazy he's made us. We're rushing our TV screaming, "Quick, Rachel Maddow's about to show a 1040 form." And so the show starts. She does a 19-minute long monologue about why it's important to see a president's tax returns, and then says, "We'll see Donald Trump's taxes after this." She Seacrested us. She went to the commercials. The only result of what happened last night is Rachel Maddow topped Rosie O'Donnell as Donald Trump's least favorite lesbian. That's it.
Jimmy Fallon said this last night, talking about the Rachel Maddow show.
Meanwhile, the White House is also criticizing Rachel Maddow, saying it's totally illegal to steal and publish tax returns. Yep, they said the documents should be released the proper way by having a Russian hacker give them to WikiLeaks. That's how you do it.
Not too bad. All right, this is James Corden last night.
On our show, Rachel Maddow revealed two pages of Donald Trump's 2005 tax return. She showed on the show that he made $150 million that year and paid 25% tax. I mean, do you understand what this means? Seriously, I'm asking. I don't. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it low? Is it high? I don't. Am I being audited? I don't understand.
That's the thing. We had no idea what those numbers meant, except that they look good for Donald Trump. By the way, Don's on line one. Don, jump in here. You're on WGN. Hi, Don.
Hello, King John.
Hey.
So you were talking about Dave Ennett, and you couldn't believe that he didn't know how many games he had called for Northwestern.
Yeah.
And by the way, you still owe me a couple of games.
Oh, this is Don from Gardner, Illinois, who does play-by-play of, is it Gardner that you do?
I did Gardner for 10 years. I've been doing Coal City for 36.
So how many games have you done?
For Coal City High School, I've done 2,183.
Wow.
And total games, I've done 2,571.
See, I told you, these guys know. They know how many games they've done. Dave does not know how many Northwestern Wildcat basketball games he's done.
Dave knows how many games he's done. He's messing with you.
Yeah, I actually wondered about that. I wondered if he was being a little, I don't know if modest is the right word, but I thought, Dave, I'll bet you know pretty well how many you've done.
Well, the big question, John, isn't how many games I've done. It's when are you going to come and call one with me?
I know. This is my dream. When I started out as a broadcaster, I worked at a little radio station in Plano, Illinois. You know this, WSPY. I was on Spio Radio in Plano, Illinois, and I would do some of the local games, and that was really fun, and I quickly got the education that you obviously do have, and that is, it's not as easy to do as it looks. I was always doing this. I would say, Johnson with the ball. He passes it over to 17. And by the time I figured out who had the ball, that guy has already given it to somebody else. I was very bad at it. So I'd like a shot at color.
I did, that, I did that kind of stuff on the radio, and I still do occasionally, actually, for the same company that you were working for then, because they now own WCSJ in Morris, who I also work for occasionally. And, oh, by the way, you were nice enough to be on my show with me once.
I was. You got to give me credit for that, Don. I did guest on your show one time. Now I got to get out there and do a game. They're waving at me, Don. I got to go, but I'll talk to you later, okay?
Thanks, John.
Take care. 256. We're getting ready for Buckaball on GN. Hey, that was fun. Somebody texted a minute ago, and they said, John, it was in caps and exclamation points. Could you please tell me what the big dance is? I keep hearing about the dance. The dance is the NCAA men's basketball tournament.